Well, I'll open up. I was convicted last week of pastor's message, and I actually lied to you last week during Sunday school. I said I was 65. I'm actually only 64, 9 months and 13 days. So,
how long were you in the womb?
Yeah, that's another story. Yeah, probably not very long. Anyways, so.
Chinese figuring you're 65 and a half.
Yeah, right. So I lied when I said I was 65. I've been in so many stores. How many have been in the stores? Well, they're always like the thrift stores or the Goodwills and stuff. Do you want to round up, you know? Everything, probably no one's been there before, but that's the first thing they always ask you. If it's $9.75, they go, do you want to round up? Every single store is like that. Even some other places are starting that. Do you want to round up? So I just all of a sudden just automatically just rounded up to 65. But I'm not 65, I'm 64. Because I can imagine someone going back and checking my birthday, go, Mansky's not 65, he lied to us. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. I did. I shouldn't have. I lied to you.
Confession is good for the soul, but bad for the reputation.
Yeah, it's bad for reputation, but it's good for honesty. So anyways, we're in John chapter 5. John chapter 5, last time we introduced the big question, we're going to just do a little bit of review. But John chapter 5, in verse 5 and 6, says, now a certain man, I should let everybody turn to it, so. Now a certain man was there who had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he already had been in that condition a long time, he said to him, do you want to be made well? Last time we introduced that big question, but we looked at an infirmity. An infirmity is that entrenched, deep-seated, lingering pattern. And when we're talking about ourselves now, we're going to speak of spiritual sins and moral sins. Entrenched, deep-seated, lingering, sinful patterns that we have established over a long period of time. These are those sins that literally become a part of you. They become you. Remember in, we went to Jeremiah, I think it was Jeremiah chapter 13. And we saw it came so much a part of you. So much a part of you was it was like the color of your skin. And you had no power in yourself to rid yourself of it. You must come to God. But these are these deep-seated, lingering, sinful patterns. In Hebrews, and let's turn to Hebrews 12, and you can just keep your bookmarks at those two, John and Hebrews 12. I believe here also we have an example. It says in 12:1, therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. It says, lay aside the sin which so easily ensnares us. That word ensnares just means to encompass, to surround. And literally, it stops you from moving forward. It inhibits your spiritual life. It just ensnares, it encompasses, it surrounds you. I will call it, just for our little picture up here. Does anyone know what that is, by the way? What is it?
Tree rings?
Tree rings? You're close. You're right. An onion. I almost smacked you right here. I got it really well. Good thing I didn't have my slippery hands. Anyways, it is an onion. And an onion grows. It grows their leaves, actually, in these concentric circles, these just patterns. And it just keeps working out. And you have continual patterns. We got to fix this thing one day. Anyways, I think it's been like this since 1956. I don't know. I mean, it's been a long time, whenever it was made. All right. So We have these layers, that we built up over time. Pastor Abadi suggests this book and gave it to me yesterday called Respectable Sins, Respectable Sins. And sometimes we always think of those, the sin, those infirmities of like addictions and so forth. But there are many, many that we build up over lives. And I'm just going to just read his little quote in the back. Says, whatever happened to sin, have Christians become so preoccupied with the major sins of our society, a.k.a. conservative news. Sometimes we watch and go, I can't believe they do this. But so preoccupied with the major sins of our society that we have lost sight of our need to deal with our own more subtle sins. And I'm going to emphasize that word, our own subtle sins. And we're going to see next time, he asks, do you want to be made well? Do you? Jerry Bridges returns to the trademark theme of holiness and addresses a dozen clusters of specific acceptable sins, quote, that we tend to tolerate in ourselves, such as jealousy, anger, pride, unthankfulness, judgmentalism. Jerry writes not from a height of spiritual accomplishment, but from the trenches of his own battles with sin. And I am up here to say that I am not up here something like I'm some victorious, complete Christian, because I will also be sharing my battles with sin. And so when he writes this book, he says, I don't do it in a spiritual, like a height of spiritual accomplishment from the trenches of my own battles with sin. In his admonition, Jerry offers a message of hope in the profound mercy of the gospel and the transforming grace of God as the means to overcome our subtle sins. Now, that's what this is for, this summer, this series is for. It's we need to make a resolute, comprehensive, and long-term God-given plan of how to deal with these things that we've added into our lives. These sins that, as it says in Jeremiah, we practice to the point where we become experts at. I'm an expert at a lot of things and a lot of sins. And because we need to come up with this comprehensive plan, this resolute plan, and on God's terms of how to deal with this. Otherwise, I believe our sanctification sometimes becomes helter-skelter. I mean, we just sort of go along in life, and all of a sudden, oh yeah, I messed up there, and we throw up a forgive me, God, and then we just keep on going and doing what we've always done. I think sometimes it's a helter-skelter approach. Sometimes in these deep infirmities, these deep-seated, lingering, entrenched sins, we try to do it through osmosis. That's the process of gradual or unconscious assimilation of ideas. If I just read my Bible and come to church and hear preaching, somehow that'll take care of those deep-seated things. They'll just go away. Well, that's not necessarily the case. I found that in my life for sure. It's not necessarily the case. It was a while back, but and this is public, so I'm not saying anything that it's not a public thing, but I remember there was a man that Pastor Cable knew very well, and he used to send out a monthly newsletter. It was a very conservative, very doctrinal newsletter every month. And he used to send it out to us, and I think we got a copy once a month. I think he even came up to Pine City. I can't remember his name. It doesn't matter. Came up to Pine City. And we heard him, just a really excellent teacher, not only teacher, but he was very sound doctrinally and so forth. And it was about 2 or 3 months, and we never got a newsletter. And I was wondering, why aren't we getting a newsletter? And I asked Pastor Cable, well, why aren't we still getting the newsletters? And he said, because Mr. So-and-so is in rehab for alcoholism. And I was shocked. I mean, here's a man that was in the scriptures continually, doing these things, but he had this deep-seated infirmity, and osmosis necessarily won't take care of it. It won't just something, some unconscious, a gradual change, and we'll just be over it. No, it needs a resolute plan. If we see in, well, let me just do the last one, then we'll just look really close again, Hebrews 12 again. And it's not through self-determination. I've tried that. I shared last time, I have a problem with procrastination. And I'm an expert at it, 50 years practicing it. You can get pretty good. I mean, why do something difficult when you can do five things, easy things that you like to do, and make yourself look busy? You know, that I don't have to get to that hard thing that my wife wants me to do or whatever. You know what I mean? Anyways, I'm an expert at it. And I don't know how many times on a Sunday night I go home and I go, Monday I'm going to really get at it. I'm going to get up early and I'm going to get these things done. No. I lay out my own plan, and guess what happens? Monday she gets up about 4:45, 5:15, something like that. Man, am I tired? I didn't sleep very good last night. And I sort of, you know, roll over, you know, like that hinge, you know, and just sleep in till 6:30, and then things happen. It never works. I spent 50 years going, okay, I'm going to get at it, and it doesn't work. In Hebrews, again, 12:1-2, when it says, we lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance. There's a planner. Endurance, the race that is set before you, it's set before you. It's put out there for you. You don't make up your own plan. You let God do that, but it's set before you. So I just want to really emphasize this morning that we have to have a resolute, comprehensive, long-term plan, and that's what we're going to look at. Remember the characteristic of an infirmity really, really quick. It has a beginning. This guy was 38 years ago, something had a beginning. It's usually a continual progression. It gets worse and worse and worse, and it ends in enslavement. In him, in the physical sense, it was paralysis. He couldn't get off the couch, I mean the mat, in a sense. And it ends in enslavement. You have no power over it. That's what Jeremiah says. How can you, which are used to doing evil, do good? It's like the color of your skin is just who you are. And then it always separates us from full and joyful spiritual life. It separates us from that. And we see that in this man. He was at the pool rather than at the temple. And we saw what happened after he was healed. Now, most of this, not all, but most of this is established in our youth. Not all of it, but most of it is established in our youth. I've got like four more things I'm working on now, and I'll show you one at a time. And each one I can trace back to my youth. I practiced it. I started it then. Not always, though. I remember, and I have no idea why I remember this. You know, some people say, do you remember where you were in 9/11, you know, when you heard about that or this? I don't know why, but I remember where I was when I heard that Rush Limbaugh was in treatment for drug addiction. And I don't know why. I was at the government center. I was on lunch break from work and so forth, and I heard Rush Limbaugh was in treatment. And it was pain medications. You know, you get an injury, and then you get addicted to these things. But he had an infirmity, some entrenched thing in his life. And I was just shocked. Wow, Rush Limbaugh. I never even listened to him, maybe a couple times, but it was just like shocking. And so I understand some things can come up when we're older, but most of them can be traced to our youth. And again, I gave this warning, and I'll just give it one more time. Parents, keep engaged with your teenagers. Limit their electronic devices, especially at the younger age. I mean, you can really get wrapped up in some things you don't want them to. Limit who their friends are. I mean, just be in their lives. But is there too many? There's not too many teenagers here. Oh, there's a few over here, all right? There's usually more. But I want to really give you a warning. I'm not yelling at you and I'm not lecturing at you. I'm just laying out the facts, laying out the facts. Teenagers know that whatever sinful patterns, whatever these layers in the onion you're wrapping around and surrounding yourself with. Whatever sinful patterns are established in your first 20 years, you will spend the next 60 years dismantling them. All right, just think about that. In their first 20 years, whatever, and it's the opposite. You put good patterns in and you can be blessed and enjoy them for the next 60 years. But you put those sinful patterns that you establish when you're up to around 20 years old, you will spend the next 60 years dismantling them. You will look back and ask, what was I thinking? What was I thinking? You just will. That's just a fact, just so you know. I'm not, whatever. So take that and don't forget it. Whatever you do in the first 20, you'll spend the next 60 years trying to dismantle them. Now, Spurgeon in Psalm 25, I think Joe mentioned to me Psalm 25 last week. Thank you. Very good psalm. And in Psalm 25, David's wrestling through many of these things. He's going to God and he says, teach me all these things. And he says, remember not the sins of my youth. I'll just do a quote from Spurgeon, Charles Haddon Spurgeon on that section. He said, the world winks at the sins of young men, and yet they are not so little after all. The bones of our youthful feasting at Satan's table will stick painfully in our throats when we are old men. He who presumes upon his youth is poisoning his old age. All right? Is poisoning his old age. So let's keep that in mind. And let's, those that are older, we are going to look. We need to dismantle the onion, in a sense. Dismantle layer by layer. It says in Hebrews 4:15, we saw that last time, that we have infirmities, plural, infirmities, for we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. That's the same word we see here in John, infirmities, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. So we have multiple infirmities. I believe we have multiple entrenched patterns in our lives. But I believe we can only deal with them one at a time, one at a time. I made the point, and I didn't lie last time, but last time I did make the point, and I've already backtracked on my own teaching, all right? I don't know if that's bad or good. But I said I'm working on two. I said I'm working on this area of procrastination, and then I tend to isolate myself. I was going to work on two, and I started, and I go, no, I got to, one at a time. And in Hebrews, we already saw 12:1, it says, lay aside the sin. So I'm going to take this onion, like this onion here, take that one on the outside, the one right there, and I'm going to, with the Lord's help, work on that one. And then I'll go to the next one. I'll go to this thing of isolation. Then I'll go to the next one. Why am I always irritated my wife when she asks me so many questions? I mean, I get irritable sometimes. She asks me questions, sometimes in a nice way, and I don't know what. I'm irritable sometimes. And I might go to, I watch too much TV. I mean, it's just layer after layer after layer. But I am determined to run with endurance a race that is set before me. I've had four major league infirmities in the past that I've dealt with. I already mentioned two last time. One was alcoholism. One was scheming and manipulating to get what I wanted. Not hard work, but scheming and manipulating to get what I wanted. I've dealt with those through this very pattern we're gonna be on this summer. I had two other major ones that I dealt with. I won't even mention them now. But it seems like in the last 5 or 10 years, it's sort of like Israel going and doing all those battles and so forth, and all of a sudden you get just a little tired. And I've sort of taken a break. I've taken a little break. And I shouldn't do that. I don't think any of us should do that. Because all of a sudden I'm hearing the distant rumblings of a chastening storm approaching. I mean, there's areas of my life that if I just continue to slide through, that I am already hearing the distant rumblings of that chastening, and I'm not going to describe what those are. But you do. Because we know in the other parts of Scripture, especially when Jeremiah, when we talked about that section in 13, I mean, God just goes, will you still not be made clean? He says, come to me, listen to me. And when they didn't, we got Jeremiah 14, the great drought. And if you read that 14, the great drought, it talks about the languishing and all this thing. It's just not good. And we talked about that last time, the warning. If you don't want to be made well, God will put the want to in you, and it's not fun. And I've been there, and the chastening is not fun. Very difficult. So I decided I'm going to do it now. I'm going to wait. I'm not going to wait till the storm approaches. How many remember last Saturday? It was not yesterday, but the Saturday before that. In North Branch, I mean, it's the last time we got rain here for a while. But I was hearing this rumbling in the distance over here. And it kept getting louder and louder, and I'm glad I ran out and shut the windows in my car and so forth. And I tell Dorothy, look out, and there's no rain, there's no rain, there's no rain. And all of a sudden, it just broke on us. I don't know who was there when that big, huge thunderbolt came down. It just shook the house. Were you there, Zach? I don't know. It just, I was laying on the couch, and I'm going, why was I laying on the couch? Maybe I was watching TV, too much TV. Anyways, it literally almost blew me off the couch. All of a sudden, we hear this thing go crashing down. I seriously thought the whole house was crashing down, but then I remembered Joe Beitler built, and it would never crash down. And so, but this huge yoke thing, this wood yoke thing with this iron stuff on it, just blew off the wall, smashed on the floor, and that storm just broke on us. I remember talking to Jamie, Casey's brother, and he was talking about Vince. He was over there. The same thing happened to them, and some motor on their well went out, just blew it out. But that's what happens when you just keep putting this off and putting this off and putting this off. The chastening storm, you don't want to break over you. And I've been there, and it is no fun. So procrastination, that's what I'm working on. And I've really been working on this thing of procrastination. And I'll tell you, the blessings I've received in the last week and a half, I don't have time to go into them, are just, and Dorothy can attest to it, just amazing, amazing. I've been following this pattern we're going to see here. And the blessings that he has given me, see, you do what he says, and then he just miraculously blesses. Oh, it's just been, I know, Pastor, you don't like saying I get spiritual goosebumps, but I actually bump them. But I do. I really do. I think of things like this, and they just go up. I'm sorry. But anyways, look into Jesus. So I've been blessed, and you will too. But so we have to look unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. So if you go back to John chapter 5, we don't set our own pattern or our own plan. I want to deal with this area of procrastination, so I look unto Jesus. And we saw that it all starts with the big picture. It all starts with the big picture. It says, now a certain man was there who had infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been in that condition a long time, he said, this is the first step. You cannot go beyond unless you answer this question. We're going to find out afterwards you have to go to the right source. But you cannot go any farther, in dealing with these long-term embedded infirmities, if you don't answer this question first, that is critical. And the question is, of course, do you want to be made well? Do you want to be made well? And we're going to spend this time and then next week on that very question before we get into other things. But do you, and I'm going to next time, do you want to be made well? Do you? And in Jeremiah, we saw the same thing. God says, will you still not be made clean? Will you still not be made clean? So we're just going to look at a couple introductions to this question, then we're going to get into the very words next week. But when we first look at this, we go, is this really a legitimate question? I mean, this guy's been like this 38 years. Of course he wants to become well. I mean, you know, we use that vernacular, duh. But, which I really don't like, by the way. Anyways, I don't know why I said it. But we do. We say that a lot. But is that a legitimate question? Do you want to be made well? Oh, of course he would. Why wouldn't he? Well, you know, if we do a reality check, first of all, Jesus said it, number one, all right? Jesus never wastes words, does he? He always gets right to it, right to it. And he never wastes words. I like that commercial. I mean, this. See, here we go again, TV. There's a commercial where someone says, I love those guys. I think it was about a plumbing commercial or something. But I look at this and I go, I love this guy. He goes right to the core thing. And so Jesus never wastes words. So when we see this, do you want to be made well? It's got to be a legitimate question because he said it. But let's just do a reality check. I always interpret scripture, and I don't know if this is seminary approved or not, but I always see what the text says, but also make sure it matches up with reality, with reality. And when Jesus asks this question, do you want to be made well? I do a reality check. And I find out most people say they do, but when we find out they really don't. Even in health issues, I found that's the case. If someone were to say, Scott, would you want to be completely healed of all your heart issues? I go, of course I would. Well, I remember the last time I was in an emergency stents and so forth, the doctor comes charging in and tells her, you got to get this man on a Mediterranean diet, all right? Get him on a Mediterranean diet. If you do that, he will be made well. Well, I'm not sure at the birthday party. I sort of made up a new thing. It was chili brats. Chili brats and big, huge, thick potato chips. Uh-oh. Now, I can't remember. Was that on the Mediterranean diet? I can't quite remember if it was or not. Wrong Mediterranean. Oh, that must be the other one. Anyways. All right. I mean, seriously. We say, oh, yeah, of course I would. I would love to get rid of my vertigo attacks. I hate them. It's one a day, and they go in these series, and it's like, when is it going to come? If I totally got rid of processed sugar completely, I would get rid of my vertigo attacks. I hate migraine headaches. I know it brings on migraine headaches. Caffeine, for me, and I'm not saying for anybody else. But, oh, man. Okay, so you can just see it's not as easy as saying, oh, yeah, I love to be made well. Sometimes even in health issues. But in spiritual issues, this is just my observation. This is reality. I know me, and I've seen it in others. They say they want to be made well, but they don't. I'll just give you some examples. And this has happened more than once. Chisago and here. We're talking and so forth, and I'll describe something that I've had victory over in the past. And they say, oh, I need victory over that. I really do. And so we get a meeting. And I'm going to lay out a plan for this specific thing. And so we get a night, and so this is serious. I go, are you sure you want to? Oh, yeah. And so we meet. And so I got a sevenfold plan layout. So I lay out the first one. I lay it all out, number one. And all of a sudden, there's a silence. And this has happened more than once. There's a silence, and all of a sudden, what's step two? And what they're saying, and I'm going, you haven't agreed to step one yet. And they're going, well, step one probably won't work. What's step two? And I go, I'm not going to go on step two until we do step one, because that's sort of like the basis of all the rest of them. And they go, just give me all seven of them, and I'll sort of pick, you know. And I go, I can't. Unless we go step one, it's just the meeting's done. They go, well, I'll think about it. And guess what? I never hear back. Never hear back. Do you want to be made well? Do you want to be made well? That's the question. Sometimes we say it is, but not necessarily do they want to in this sense. And we're going to see it next time. I'm going to ask, we got a couple pastors here. Pastor Sturtz and Pastor Rabati. Put you on the spot. Now, I might be totally wrong here, and sometimes when I do these experiments, it's a total opposite dud. But I'm just going to ask you, in your counseling, not any specific one or anything, but in your general counseling, let's just say marriage counseling, what is the hardest thing to do? The hardest thing? Is it to discover the root problem? Number two, find a biblical solution to the root problem. Or three, convince a couple to act on the solution of the big problem. I'm just going to throw it to you. What is the hardest to accomplish in the long run?
Number three by far.
Number three by far. Okay. Whew. I wasn't wrong. I did an experiment up here once, and it was a total dud, and Pastor Rockensop came up to me, and he goes, Scott, if I were you, I'd practice that before you tried it the first time at Sunday school. He was being very, very gracious, and I'm going, yeah, you are right. Anyway, so number three, so that's the hardest, difficult. Pastor Rabadi, would you say the same thing? Yeah, definitely three. So they're coming to the marriage, or maybe two people are at each other, whatever. And the most difficult thing is convincing the couples to act on the solution. To act on the solution. And that's what I find out too. And in my own life, I'm not pointing at everybody like, hey, all you guys, you know. I'm the same way. Do you really want to be made well? Because you have to really want to before you were. And you can't just say, yeah, I think that's a good idea. You know, I should probably do that. No, it's not probably or any of that. Yeah, it's convincing the couple to act on the solution. Wouldn't ministry and counseling be just great? Here's one more commercial. I'll try not to say anything about any more commercials, which goes back to the point I watched way too much TV when I was young, and it still has a power over me somewhat. But anyways, there's a commercial where this lady gets this meals online, and she sits down to eat them. She puts them in the microwave, sits down to eat them. And all of a sudden, she tastes it, and she goes, this is good. This is good. This is really good. And all of a sudden, something goes like this. She goes, we don't have to cook anymore. We don't have to cook anymore. And she gets all excited. We don't have to cook anymore. And her husband comes around the corner, and he going, we don't have to cook anymore? And we don't have to cook anymore. And they're hugging and dancing, and we don't have to cook anymore. And it's all exciting. And then the commercial's done. And obviously, the meal must have been really good. Wouldn't that be just wonderful, let's say, in marriage counseling? You'd come in, they'd tell you all the problems. You would find the biblical solution. Basically, you're selfish and self-centered and serve one another. Obey your husband. Husband, love your wife. And all of a sudden, they look at each other. We don't have to fight anymore. We don't have to fight anymore. And they hug each other and they go around. We don't have to fight anymore. And they skip out the door here, out the front door. We don't have to fight anymore. And never to see them in the counseling session again. Wouldn't that be nice? That would just be wonderful. I would actually like to be a pastor at that point. I tried that thing for about a year, man. It was a disaster. I respect what you guys go through, by the way. I respect all the stress and the things that you guys go through. But anyways, that would be a wonderful thing. But that's not how it works. That's not how it works. And we have to come to this question, do you want to be made well? So it is a legitimate question. I think it's the biggest question. I think it's the hardest one to hurdle. Once you hurdle that, I found out the going, it gets exciting. It gets exciting. It really does. We see God blessing us, and stuff starts to happen, and it's just, anyways, the healing starts. But we have to answer that question. And second of all, just to introduce this question, I'm just going to mention one more thing, and I will be done at 10:15, all right? I think this is usually important. You might not think it's so important. That's fine. But this is, I think, one of the first mentioned principles we see here. If you know, John chapter 1 through 5 are not found in any of the other synoptic gospels, those gospels that are sort of like each other. This is completely not found in any of the others. I think we can all agree, most commentators agree, that this is in very, very early, probably the first part of his public ministry. I'm not going to go into my view of when it takes place, because it'll be then 3 months of meticulously going through a timeline. But Most put it in the period when he came out of the wilderness and before he went up to Nazareth to proclaim that he was the Messiah and they were going to throw him over a cliff. Most of them jam it in there someplace. That's okay. But that would also make it very early, the earliest part of his public ministry. And so this is the earliest period of Jesus' ministry. And next time we're going to see, does Jesus, or a couple weeks, we're going to see, does Jesus have the power to really take care of long-term infirmities? Does he really have that power? And we're going to see this principle throughout the first five chapters of John. In every single area, he just knocks him right down. You know, there's a new sheriff in town now. And this is actually the first mention of Jesus in Jesus' ministry of him directly engaging a man for healing purposes. He healed somebody's son in absentia. He wasn't the son actually wasn't there earlier, I think, for another purpose. But this was the first time he engaged a man for healing purposes. And the first mention principle, it says this, under the first mention principle, the idea is that God indicates the truth that stands in his mind that will not change later on. This means that the initial discussion of any subject in the Bible would have unusual significance by this standard. And what Jesus seems to be doing here, he takes one of the hardest cases here, and he accomplishes this healing. And the first thing he asks this fellow, do you want to be made well? Which makes it have implicit value for all other healings and all other infirmities to come. He has authority over all of them. If he has authority over this one, this question then becomes not only implicit but universal for all of us. I'll give you an example. When I was doing junior church, first time doing junior church at Chisago Lake Baptist, many years ago. I'm not going to say how many years ago because I might mess it up, and I don't want to do that. Many years ago, we did junior church. I remember the first day in junior church, there was quite a few younger kids in front and some of the older kids in back, and they really weren't paying attention. Actually, they were sort of chatty patties, having a little tea party back there, and it disrupted the whole class. And as I was teaching this thing, it was really tough. They're all sort of not really paying attention, goofing off and so forth. Just a little aside, I'm not exaggerating here. Working with the kids from Sunrise, your parents are doing a great job, by the way. I have never had such a good group of kids ever. Just that's a little aside, but I really haven't. You guys are doing a wonderful job. But anyway, so the class was just not going too good. So at the end of it, I made a decision. I'd gone to a lot of junior church seminars and stuff before that. I did a lot of reading on it. And the only thing I really remember is that there's a little cord that goes right here on the back of your neck, right about there. And even when I do it to myself, it hurts, all right? And if you need to have some discipline in your class sometime, you can go behind somebody and give a little pinch on that cord. It's not like giving someone a spank, just a little firm pinch on that cord, and it hurts. And so I go to myself, I'm going to take the meanest, the biggest guy in this class. And you might sound like I'm just being a nasty person, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to make him cry. That's just, I mean, these weren't real big guys. I wouldn't do it with you guys, believe me. Okay, if anyone messes up in this class, I'm not going to do it to you because I'd probably get my clock clean. But anyways, so I went behind him, the biggest one troublemaker there was. I went behind him, and I went, until he cried. Everybody else saw that he cried. What does that mean? That means it's implicit for everybody else in this whole class. If I can make the biggest guy cry, don't you even think of messing around with me for the rest of the time. And you know what? Nobody did. It was implicit. It was universal for all the kids, implicit, that if I did it, I set my authority over the strongest kid, that you're not going to get away from it. So, it went really well the rest of the year. I mean, we're all friends, and I Not like I was a big jerk the rest of the year. Not at all. We had fun. But I didn't have any discipline problems the rest of the year. Except at the church picnic at the end of the year. Remember that? Church picnic at the end of the year. These guys remembered this. They didn't forget this, by the way. And so right after the picnic was almost over, all of a sudden I see all these guys surrounding me. And like four or five guys surrounded me. Each one had multiple water balloons. And I'll tell you, there was no escape. I took my punishment. They just plastered me. I was just soaking wet because they remembered this and they weren't going to let that go. But you know what? It worked. It worked. So when I say the first mention principle here, when he says to this man, do you want to be made well? This isn't just to this man. This is implicit and universal for every time he approaches somebody. Do you want to be made well? He approaches somebody with these long-term entrenched infirmities in their life. This is for you. This is for me. This is for all of us. And he's asking each one of us in these layers here, do you want to be made well? You have to get across that hurdle before you can get into any of the other. If you don't, you won't. And we said that last time. If you don't, you won't. It's universal for all of us. So next week, we're going to get into the very word, do you want to be made well? What does that really mean? What does that mean for me and us and so forth? So it is a legitimate question. And because of the first mention principle, I believe it's it has implications for all of us. So by the time I pray, I will be done 1 minute early. Heavenly Father, we thank you. Praise your name. Thank you that you do care. We're going to see when we set the table that Jesus is alone, but man, he cares. He cares. He sees and he cares and he works. And we just praise you. Sometimes this last couple times have been sort of a negative a lesson on our sin, but Father, you are a God of grace. And you will heal to the uttermost if we just answer the question, do you want to be made well? We just pray that we would, and that this week we might even ask you, what are some of these things in my life that you would want to peel off, like that onion, one layer at a time? And Father, that we might have complete and a communion with you and with others and from the fellowship of the saints. And we just thank you now in Jesus' name. Amen.